interview with Stephanie Nichols regarding pricing model. Welcome. So this is Dionne Atkinson. This is another one of the interview series that I've started. And today I'm interviewing Stephanie Nichols. Stephanie was in one of my classes recently when we were talking about different pricing models. A lot of times with personal historians, I think the pricing model where you have package price and then payment by milestones seems to be one of the most popular ways to do things. But Stephanie commented in the class that she used a different model and was really happy with it. So, of course, my interest was piqued, and I wanted to ask her to do an interview so she could share with us how she does her pricing. So, Stephanie, welcome. And I'd like to give you an opportunity to just talk about yourself and your business a little bit before we get started on the questions.
Thank you, Dionne, and I appreciate the opportunity. Maybe I'll start my story in 2008 when the New York Times ran a series of articles called Emerging Fields. And I loved these, partly because it's just interesting to see what was going on in the world of work, but also because I was really, really wanting to find an alternative to my own work in Unitarian Universalist parish ministry at the time. And one of these articles was about something called personal history, which I had never heard of, but immediately responded to as something that might be the answer. So I pretty directly set out to make a career change, and I am now in my fourth year of helping people write memoirs and preserve family stories and history. My business is predominantly print, although I have done some unprofessional audio. I specialize in interviewing, writing, and editing, and I contract out transcription, design, and layout, and I use a third-party proofreader. I've had a steep learning curve in just about every aspect of this business. I've practiced on my poor family and a couple of indulgent friends. And at this point, I am much more comfortable in what I have to offer, and I've been really fortunate to have a wide range of interesting projects that have come my way. I think it's helped that I live in an affluent suburb of Boston where the type of demographic that our clients are plentiful. I know a ton of people through my parish work, and I also live near my mother, who also knows a lot of people in that target demographic. So business has come my way pretty readily.
Nice.
Which I feel very happy about and lucky. And then I had a couple of significant jobs come from people doing Google searches or looking at the APH directory, so I'll put in a plug for those avenues too.
Great.
I think the Times was right about personal history being an emerging field. There is a lot of work out there for us, especially if we have access to people of means, which I happen
yes.
to have.
Okay. So could we just like jump right in and have you describe your pricing and payment process?
Yes. I charge per half day, and a half day might consist of preparation and an interview, or it might be writing and editing, or it might be corresponding about drafts and details and things. I keep a timesheet for each job, so I know how many hours I have put in, because although I would like it if my work sort of laid out neatly in half-day chunks, it doesn't always, and so I need to keep track of the number of hours so that when I go to bill, I can put those into half-day increments for the billing process. I bill as we go along because I have found that these projects sort of ebb and flow, and so there isn't a set interval, but after each little surge of work, I tend to send out an invoice. And
so what equals a half day? Is that 4 hours of work?
Well, that varies a little bit. It depends somewhat on what the nature of the work is, because I have found that interviewing, for example, is very intensive work, and so a preparation plus an interview, the interview itself might last for 2 hours and the preparation for one, maybe, but then there's getting to the person's house and there's preparing myself psychologically and all that, and I just usually take all that and say that's a half day.
Okay.
If I'm at my desk and editing and writing for someone, I gauge how efficient and focused I'm being. So if I am just really on in, you know, some kind of perfect world, it might be a 3-hour half day because I got so much done. And if I'm kind of distracted, I let it go to 4 or even a little bit more. But I honestly, I use my judgment about that, and no one's ever questioned it.
How many half days do you collect before you do an invoice?
If we're right in the middle of a kind of measurable aspect of the work, like let's say it's a smaller memoir based on just 2 or 3 interviews, and I once I've done perhaps 2, it depends how the interviews are spaced out. So if I have done 2 of the interviews and had them transcribed, I might bill for that because I also, you know, add onto the same invoice the transcription cost. I don't like to run them up too high before having people pay, especially at first,
right,
to make sure that they're going to come through.
Right.
But once we build up a rapport and I get a feeling for what's comfortable for the client, you know, I might, if I'm doing an intensive piece of writing for several days, it might run up to 2,000 or 3,000 before I bill, but usually it would be less than that.
Okay. So how did you arrive at this process?
Well, probably like everybody, I found pricing to be the most difficult, most challenging aspect of this. And I'd heard about the project price method, but what I was finding was that each project was so different that it was really hard to know in advance what the right price was even going to be. I could do a range, but the range was pretty wide. And then what also seemed to be paired with the project prices is these detailed contracts that say, here's exactly what's included and here's what's not included, just to protect the personal historian and, you know, perhaps to protect the client, but especially to protect the personal historian from being taken advantage of in that project.
Right.
So I was not sold on that way of doing it. And on the other hand, hourly billing, which some people do, the psychology of that, to me, is a little bit nickel and diming. Like, as the client, I can imagine that if I knew that every time I asked for something or interacted that I was on an hourly clock, I just think it's
kind of like taking a taxi, right?
Yes, exactly. It's like you think, it's like the difference between having a monthly cell phone bill that you're going to pay no matter what and paying per call. So then in 2009, I went to the Valley Forge conference, and Mike Oak, who is our colleague in Great Britain, gave a workshop where he described his pricing model, and it was essentially this one. He charges by the day for every aspect of the project up until what he calls a project price, which is the design and layout and production of the book. But he laid out, he described how he gives people as few or as many days as they need in order to get their manuscript ready. And that the day consists of whatever it is that needs to be done at that stage in the process. And he just says to people up front, we'll have as few or as many of these as we need. And he doesn't use a contract. And I thought, oh, that's it. I'm going to try that.
He doesn't use any kind of a contract?
What he said was, and I don't want to speak for him now, but what he said then was that he sends a letter outlining what he will do for the client. And then they pay as they go. So, you know, if anything about that isn't working, they adjust it or the project stops. So that's what I started doing. I found that a whole day didn't really work as an increment because I very rarely, unless I'm under a tight deadline and doing a ton of writing, in which case it's just 2 half days. But half days seem to be a fairly... that was a workable chunk for me for the way I work. And I don't use contracts either. I know that's heresy in the APH.
Well, I find myself a little shocked about that. It's like you're really trusting that, you know, the client is going to pay you. If the client doesn't, you don't have much recourse.
But you're billing as you go along, so, you know, you just don't get too far ahead of them.
I see.
If they haven't
so
paid,
so if they stop paying for any reason, then you just don't continue with the work.
Right. But see, but what I have found, and this was all so experimental at first, but it just keeps working, so I keep doing it. One of the things I was concerned about if you use a contract right away is that before you know the person very well, you're pulling out a legal, you know, a legal-ish document that is basically anticipating problems. And what I'm at that stage of a relationship with somebody, I feel like what we're doing is building trust and warmth and getting to know each other.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to introduce that, and yet I totally understand the need for protection. Like, I don't want to,
yes,
you know, just plunge in and say, sure, we'll just assume everything's going to work out well. But
so do you have any kind of agreement to work together at all that is
I do something similar to what Mike does, which is I've met with them, first of all. I guess so far for me in every case, I have my first one where it isn't face-to-face, it's long distance, but we've started to build a relationship, and then I explain to them verbally, and then I send them a letter describing how the process is going to go and what I'm going to do. And so far, that has worked. What's happened every time is that after an interview or maybe two, they are enjoying it so much, and we like each other, and hopefully, presumably they like me, and then they get invested, and then they want it all to work well.
Yes.
And then, I only have had one time with a person who has very little money and is having trouble paying, and we've slowed the project way down, and she has agreed to sort of go on a payment plan that she can afford, and I said, that's fine, and we'll just go at the pace that you're able to pay for.
That sounds good. You know, actually, that's really very refreshing hearing this, because it kind of harks back to the day where, you know, a person's word or a person's handshake was good enough, you know. And also, I hadn't really thought about it so much, about it being kind of a threatening thing to have a contract for the whole thing. And they do often have clauses like, and if we have trouble, we'll go to mediation and blah, blah, blah. And that is very daunting for a beginning of the relationship. But, you know, on the other hand, people are kind of used to that way of working. So I think it's interesting, and I applaud you for creating a system that works for you that's perhaps a little more human being to human being.
Well,
then
I'm afraid
that you're going to sue me.
Yeah. Well, I'm a lawyer's daughter.
You're a lawyer's daughter.
Yes. And so I grew up in the world of contracts.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm definitely keeping my ears open to stories from colleagues about problems that they've had, and always thinking, you know, am I making a mistake in some way? Like, is there some way I'm leaving myself open to liability issues? And if, you know, I could become convinced that I need to do more in that regard, but I haven't yet.
Some kind of a contract, but maybe not one that's full of legalese. Very interesting.
Or that comes out at a slightly, I don't know. I'm staying open about that. Yeah.
Okay. So you're going to have to keep us informed if anything changes about that, because I'll be interested to know.
Yeah.
So the next question I had is, what would you say to other people who might want to try this for their business? How should they get started? What do they need to keep in mind?
Well, you know, I just jumped in based on, I guess I would suggest listening to that Mike Oak workshop, which was from the 2009 Valley Forge conference. The MP3 is available. And keep in mind that if you speak about it with confidence, and maybe this is true of all kinds of things about this work, when, you know, it's like we have to fake it till we make it or something, but, you know, you just say, I bill this way. You know, I bill per half day. And I will say something like, a half day might consist of preparation and an interview, or it might consist of writing and editing. and we do as few or as many of those as you need. And what's good about that is people know that they can just start.
Yes.
And see what happens. And then the other thing that has been very valuable for me is the more experience I get with this, the more I can show them samples and say, you know, this book was based on 6 interviews and it wound up being a $15,000 book and here's why. You know, and this was 2 interviews and it was ended up being a $4,000 book and here's why. And then they get a ballpark. Like, I guess that would be one of my main pieces of advice is to give, once you figure out what your ballpark is, which takes a while, it's really hard to start.
Yes.
This.
Did it take you a while to figure out how much you charge for a half a day?
Yeah, well, I'm still, you know, I'm charging $250 for a half day at this point, and that's okay. I think I would like it to be a little more, but that's tricky. You have to find the number you think people can accept that you can also live with, or
yes.
You know, as you
that covers your expenses and gives
and
you
your
a
work
profit.
Style, you know.
Yes.
And this is what you've been teaching too, but how much of your time is billable and how much isn't, and what are your income needs and all that kind of stuff.
When do you talk to your clients about this process? Is it in the initial interview or after they decide to work with you? When do you do that?
It pretty much always comes up in the consultation phase when, you know, first we might talk about they've approached me because they're already interested in doing something. And
mm-hmm.
then I bring my samples and we sit down and, you know, I learn a little bit about them and show them the books and start feeling out what scope of project they might want to do. And they're usually trying to figure that out as well at this point. And I try to keep the conversation off the cost until
right.
they're more interested, you know, until they're sort of engaged.
Until the interest level is at a certain point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the people who are going to be the best clients don't bring up cost right away either.
Uh-huh.
So, they then eventually will say, and how much might something like this cost? So
yes.
then I launch into how I bill and
yes.
show them a couple of samples and give them ranges for, you know.
So have you any of your clients ever specifically commented or given you feedback on why they like the way that you do your pricing? Have you ever got any indication that they like it for any particular reason?
No, and I think, you know, I'm not sure that they, I am probably the only personal historian they've worked with.
Yes.
So they're not comparing it to anything specific, usually.
Okay.
But all I can say is they've never complained about it or challenged it.
Yeah.
Once in a while, in that very first conversation, they ask what you did, which is how much is a half, you know, how many hours is a half day?
Yes.
But again, once that relationship, I've read about this concept of the KLT factor, the no-like trust factor.
Uh-huh.
Once KLT has kicked in, you know, then it they're just...
I don't think I know what KLT stands for.
For no-like trust.
No-like trust, okay.
Yeah. So once they know, like, and trust you, then everything becomes smoother, you know. I've never had anybody challenge their invoice.
Okay. All right. Well, that's really good news, and this is really a third form of pricing and one that I was not that aware of, so I'm happy to learn more about that in working with other personal historians. So before we close, I just wanted to ask, do you offer any services to other personal historians that you would like to mention before we close?
Usually I'm the one engaging other people to help me with the parts of this process that I don't do. I have done a very little bit of coaching with somebody who's even newer than I am, but just a little bit, and I'm happy to do that kind of thing, but I'm only a few years into it myself. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So before we leave, would you just one more time say your name, your company name, and give us your website address?
Yes. My name is Stephanie Nichols, and my company is Stephanie Nichols Personal History. The web address is nicholsstories.com, and that has just one S in the middle.
Okay. All right. Well, Stephanie, thank you very much. This was a very interesting piece of information. I'm very happy that you shared it with us.
Well,
thank you
for asking, Dionne, and thank you for everything you're doing for all of us.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Okay. All right. We'll close the interview now.